Senate Bill 708, first, District Attorney Harold Haas.
Gary, give me that release, will you? Gary?
Yeah.
Give me the release, please. And the,
Right, can we go around?
And the brief.
What's our agenda today?
Somebody just wiped my thing.
No, I was in the kitchen. Maybe they just haven't got that one. You gonna read all that, Hector?
Madam Chairman, I wonder if it'd be permissible if I'd have Mr. McLean sit with me on this.
Surely, he'd be happy to.
At least for the purpose of going through the bill, or the proposed amendments to the bill.
Would you both state your names for the record, please?
Yes, my name's Harold Haas, and I'm the District Attorney from Multnomah County.
My name's Gary McLean, and I'm a Deputy DA from Multnomah County.
Harriet. Harriet, the board. Go ahead, Mr. Haas.
Madam Chairperson, we call back to our prior meeting on this type of legislation. At that time, the committee asked that we prepare some amendments to present existing legislative bills that would meet some of the problems that we felt existed in Multnomah County and the state of Oregon. We looked at Senator McPherson's bill initially, and quite frankly, we discussed it also with legislative council and felt that there were such substantial constitutional problems in that bill that we would almost have to completely gut it and just start anew. So we did take as a jumping off point Senate Bill 708 to go over some of the material and some of the background, because I know some of the other committee members were not available for that hearing. The amendments deal with three basic areas, and they're aimed at, one, banning the massage parlors that engage in masturbation for a fee. Secondly, banning the live sex circus shows. And thirdly, giving law enforcement a right to prosecute purveyors of hardcore pornography. Now, I served, as you know, in the legislature, I think with every member of the committee, and I am aware that some people feel there's nothing inherently wrong in any of the conduct that this bill directs itself to. However, since becoming district attorney, I have had my eyes opened and realized that that viewpoint is made in the abstract, and that it really fails to recognize the problem that wide-open sex for a fee intensifies and it creates to the community and to the state. The massage parlors that basically are located in Multnomah County in neighborhoods as well as on the thoroughfares, and which I believe will proliferate to the other outlying communities throughout the state, when they're located next to residential areas, as some are, they present a constant irritant to the residents of your community. And not only on the moral issue of whether or not that conduct should be engaged in, because of the late night traffic that seems to congregate in those areas, the noise that obviously occurs, and the incidents of accosting young women who are not employees of those units, seeking to have them provide the services that the massage parlors, sex for a fee, provide. The sexual massage parlors employ, for the most part, and we've handled, how many cases, Gary? What do we have pending now, 30 to 40 cases?
30 to 40 cases.
We find that they employ, for the most part, very young women, who, to be charitable, I would classify as naive. And we have no doubt that this introduction of sex for a fee is the first step for them on the road to prostitution, as those of, as is traditionally thought of in the legislative context. We know that feuds, disputes have erupted in that community of the massage parlor, sex for a fee, We've had a couple of attempted burnings of the parlors, had a bullet fired, at least one incident, a bullet fired through the window of one establishment. And our intelligence indicates that's an effort of control of the entire industry, and it also indicates that it would probably intensify if something isn't done. We recognize that the entire area of pornography is a difficult area constitutionally, and also as a matter of personal conviction of all of us. Quite frank to say that I think any time you start legislating in the area of what one person should be allowed to read and not read, you should be extremely cautious. However, we know, it's even reported in the New York Times, that in the state of New York, the pornography industry is totally controlled by organized crime. And as you know, the intelligence section of the Portland Police Department testified to this committee that they felt that organized crime in this area, in Portland, in Oregon, was already making its influence felt. One of the reasons, not only does it make possible the procurement of large profits to plow back into its illicit and illegal type of enterprise, but it also allows the skimming or the washing of money that they have acquired illegally and to run it through these outlets to wash it so that it can be utilized. Yes, Senator Burns? I'm sorry.
No,
I thought I got the signal.
Excuse me, Mr. Haas. Committee members have a mock-up in their folder of the amendments to Senate Bill 708, which Mr. Haas has prepared.
Okay, thank
Go
you.
Ahead.
Now, we feel that...
Senator Keith Burns?
Yeah. What were you talking about? These parlors are used to wash money?
That's correct.
And where did the money originate?
Well, the money will originate, Senator, from any number of sources, from the sale of narcotics throughout the United States, heroin and otherwise, from the operation of prostitution rings and otherwise. Any type of illicit type of conduct that organized crime is acknowledged to be in by the FBI, by Congress, by even the New York Times, it has to find an outlet to wash those funds in order that they can be reinvested legally, and they don't have to undergo the possible prosecution for income tax evasion.
We don't have the knowledge you do. Wash is kind of a mysterious term.
Well, the money that they acquire through the sale of narcotics, obviously, to open up a new establishment and to utilize those funds, there has to be an explanation of where those funds come from, or the Internal Revenue Department will, of course, proceed against them and require explanation. The typical approach utilized by organized crime is to take those funds and push them through some sort of business which is legal, where there is a high cash flow. And therefore, because of the high cash flow and the non-keeping of books, they can run an unseemly amount of cash money through there, which has been through the sale of narcotics or otherwise, and then declare it. And then, as far as the federal government's concerned, the money is clean money, it's been accounted for, and under those circumstances, then they can go ahead and utilize it for whatever purposes they desire.
Senator Keith Burns.
Well, you're saying that organized crime's money is being washed through the massage parlors that are being operated in Portland, Oregon?
No, Senator, I concluded my remarks in the massage parlors, and I took up the subject of pornography, the pornography industry in Oregon, and directed my remarks about washing those funds through the pornography industry.
All right. Now, the pornography industry includes what?
Well, Senator,
I would
include those, yes.
Are there other items?
Well, if you've been in one of the stores, Senator...
I haven't.
Well, I'm sorry that you haven't. I think it would be an enlightening experience for all the members of this committee to see what we're talking...
The point I was trying to make, Senator, was this, that you talk about washing money, and this is brand new news to me that there's... any washing of money going on in these areas in Oregon, and I'm very curious about that.
Well, Senator, I'd suggest to you that the members of the Portland Vice Squad who were here at the last meeting testified to this point, and recognize and testifying also.
How come you didn't know what the word wash was?
Because I didn't ask.
And also, of course, I'll be happy to provide you with a New York Times article on what the, how the washing technique is utilized.
I know how it's utilized.
Well, I thought you weren't familiar with the term, okay?
I'm concerned about Oregon.
Okay. If you'd, any time like to speak with the Vice Department, Portland Police Department, I'd be happy to make them available to you personally.
Thank you.
Yeah. The, we feel that in the pornography area that the bill that we present meets the constitutional test. And the one other thing you might consider, just because of the cost of litigating in the area of pornography, as to whether or not you would remove it from the Class A misdemeanor situation and make it a Class C felony. Going to the bill, basically what we've done to go to the first section is to redefine what a public show is so that the efforts that are being made now, and this is where you have really live sex acts on stage for a fee, this basically covers that area and removes two defenses that they utilize now. One, they say it's not public because minors are excluded. And if minors are excluded, therefore it obviously is not open to all of the public. Secondly, they engage in the practice of charging a nominal, like a dollar, membership fee for you to enter the theater. Section 2 of this bill, subsection 2, deals with that situation and removes those defenses, basically, from the live sex show situation. Section 3 is not new language. It's been in almost all of the bills that you had before you concerning the type of conduct that it covers.
May we interrupt Senator Hoyt?
Mr. Hogg, I'd like to talk about line 13 about public show. In this definition, you wouldn't know about this, but when I was a young fellow down in North Portland, some of those old warehouses, they had canvassing meetings for the people. It was during Prohibition, but they could have had public shows there. They didn't make their mind just that way. But I just wonder if this, too, doesn't drive something underground that you really can't put your finger on. In other words, I'm questioning whether that definition there is really adequate.
Well, Senator, we'll be obviously happy to comment on any...
First, you used the word advertised or held out. Most of these places were like a blind pig. You had to get their name and number and call them up or come in with a card. There wasn't any advertising or public solicitation.
Well, it's in the legal sense of advertising or holding out to be accessible, I don't know how more broad you could have it. It's hard to not have someone come to a location to see something unless you've held it out or told them that it is accessible to the public or to the members of a club or to an organization, that there's admission or there's not an admission. I really believe, Senator Hoyt, that the bill is about as expansive in that area as you would desire. I think it covers the problem as we know it within the city of Portland and Multnomah County.
You don't think this is going to eliminate it, do you? I'm not fighting you.
I
think you ought to know what we're doing here. We're going to drive it underground and probably cut down the traffic, but we're not going to eliminate it. And if we know that, that's fine. But
I would suggest that it would be extremely difficult to put on this type of, quote, entertainment, end of quote, in Portland, where I think the market is more readily accessible, on a secret basis. I don't think you could make enough money out of it to engage in that type of business, Senator. The way they make their money is through the advertising media to a certain extent until the Oregonian and the Journal refuse to carry the ads, and through the marquees that they utilize. They hand out handbills in downtown Portland, and then, of course, by word of mouth and by the advertising they have on the front, it becomes readily available that hardcore pornography and that type of entertainment is there. I don't profess for these amendments that they will legislate morality, nor prevent crime, but I do suggest that they give law enforcement, if this is the wish of the legislature and this committee, they give law enforcement a handle to enforce the law, rather than now merely run people through the system with going through judicial gymnastics and costing approximately $1,500 for each case prosecuted only to the district court level.
Mr. Hawes, had you reached Section 3?
Yes, Senator.
That phrase, "or touching of sexual organs," bothers me. Couldn't holding of hands or putting an arm around the shoulder or something come within that?
Well, I don't think we... no, I really don't think it would, Senator Brown, and I can't imagine a prosecutor being interested in even considering wasting his time and effort prosecuting that kind of case.
Yeah, but I'm interested in the law standing up as constitutional.
Right. No, I think the sexual organs, you remember, we even went to the point in 1969 in the legislature of passing the bill to pick up from where the Supreme Court had declared the contributing statute unconstitutional. We talked about private parts, and I suggest if private parts met the test that sexual organs would even be more specific and would be safe. Going to, and as you realize, this makes a violation of the section of Class C felony. And basically what you're doing by this legislation is you're giving law enforcement an opportunity to proceed, not really against the participants. We have a policy, and I think it's pretty uniform throughout the state, that where the participants are ready and able and willing to testify, immunity is normally granted to them for the purpose of getting at the people who are actually putting the money behind this and who are running the business itself. Going to Section 5, Section 5 deals with the massage parlors. It seems, and I'm sure that we all agree, but I don't think that it's a reason not to consider legislation. But no matter what the legislature does, there's always an inventive mind out there who will find a way around it. The legislature, in its decision-making process with a new code, continued to make prostitution a crime. Someone came up with the idea, well, as prostitution is defined, it does not cover masturbation for a fee. Therefore, the proliferation of the massage parlors throughout the community, wherein the usual procedure is the person comes in, they're given a book. In the book are several ladies, all nude pictures of each, and they pick out which person they wish to provide the service for them. After having that made that decision, and if she is available, they then are taken to the other room. The next step is usually a nude shower with the person that the person has selected. And after that, the next step is a massage of some sort, or what they call a lotion, a body lotion rub. And following that is the finish, the finale of masturbation of the customer. What this does, basically, is add on page 2, line 4, to the definition in subsection 2 of prostitute, the word sexual contact. And then in subsection 5, we define sexual contact means the touching of the sexual organs or other intimate parts of a person not married to the actor for the purpose of arousing or gratifying the sexual desires of either party, all of which is kind of familiar language to us, being basically the language somewhat modified out of the criminal code. Now, again, what you're doing here, and you'll see Section 6 states that the crime, it would be the crime of prostitution if they engaged in or offered or agreed to engage in sexual conduct or contact in return for a fee. So what it does is modify the traditional prostitution statute in the way we think of it to include the masturbation for a fee. And basically what it does, it allows law enforcement to get at the owners, operators, people who are supplying the funds to operate the sex-for-fee massage parlors, and to promote prostitution that way would become a Class C felony.
Yes.
And we feel that getting a Class C felony, a type of handle on these people, would be the best approach to handling the problem in the community. It's too easy, if it's just a misdemeanor because of the money situation, to merely just pay a fine and walk away. But this will make it a Class C felony. We think it would get their attention.
Madam Chairman.
Senator John Burns.
Carl, I don't have any problem with the manner in which you've amended 167.007, the part you've just spoken to. But I want to go back for a minute to the part on Section 2 and the live public show, because as I understand it, your prosecutions have been hindered up to now because of the public place definition in the public indecency sex statute, and I notice that you perpetuate the usage of the word public here. Do you think that by redefining, by defining this as public show, that you get away from the legal problem that you've had in, up to now?
I think we do, Senator Burns, but I would state that I had the same feelings that you did as we went through. We picked up some language that legislative council had prepared at the request of several members of the House and Senate, utilizing this approach of going first to live public show and then going secondly to public show. And I certainly think that it might be preferable to, well, let me think. I'm wondering if they're going to, what we worry about is unless we define what a public show is, we worry about them going to the statutes and going to the public theater or public show area or the area of what is a public place and utilizing that for a defense. And we felt by actually taking the language public in utilizing it and defining it, that we precluded them going to the public place definition as a defense.
Well, two questions, Madam Chairman. One, you feel that the cases mandate that public has to be in the statute in some place. Is that correct?
No, I don't think it has to be.
Okay.
We just felt that dealing time after time with the defense of what is a public place, that we didn't want to have to deal with that definition versus what is a private place definition within the meaning of this bill if we don't have public in it.
All right. Well, then I'm wondering, you don't amend 163.465, and perhaps Gary will want to look at that later, but the question that I have is whether or not this might fly in the face of that and create a problem because of duplicity. You needn't speak to it now, but
we'll take a look at that.
Take a look at it, and we'll work on it.
Contact you.
Okay. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I wanted to.
Senator Cook.
Carl, I came in late, but maybe you touched this before. I haven't followed the news reports too closely, but haven't you successfully prosecuted those involved in the live sex acts under the prostitution statute?
We've successfully prosecuted and prior to the time we got there, they were unsuccessfully prosecuted. No, but the matter is on appeal, and of course what we're looking at is to what may or may not occur after a period of time before legislative action could be taken. If they should rule on the section differently than we feel it is, then we'll be left basically without any effective way to enforcing the law.
Now, this is broader than that, though. Couldn't you amend the prostitution section now so as to clearly include live sex acts within its purview? Or have you considered any amendments along that line?
It's a problem with prosecution, Vern. In the way it arises is this. You have sexual conduct between consenting females is illegal in the state of Oregon. I think, enlightenedly got rid of the adultery and the fornication statutes. So you start out with sexual conduct between two people is legal. And then you say, but sexual conduct between two people for a fee becomes illegal. But the problem you have in prosecuting the case is you have to have corroborating testimony other than the co-defendant or the co-actor that in fact it was for a fee. Now, on the Kravitz case, which was the one where we actually made a successful prosecution against the owner and operator of the theater, the defendant, there was a written receipt for the money that he paid to the man to engage in sexual intercourse with a woman. And that, we're just not that hopeful that there's going to be a written receipt that often. In fact, you know, we think that we've educated them by that conviction that that probably will not occur again.
Well, you don't really believe that any organized business could operate and not have records of some kind that would establish the employment?
Oh, yeah.
You're not saying that these people, that you really believe they're going to start conducting this thing and these people aren't going to do this for nothing, I don't think, by and large, and engage in this. They're going to have payroll records. They're going to have unemployment compensation. You're going to have Uncle Sam and Uncle Tom looking down their neck to get the taxes from them. Any threat that you're going to have a situation where
best answer to that is absolutely I believe that, because we know it to be a fact, because we prosecuted cases that are identically the situation that you've spoken to. When you hire someone off the street to come in and to engage in sexual intercourse on stage at $3 a performance or $5 a performance, Vern, they just don't sign them up to unemployment compensation and workman's comp or anything else. They give them their $5, they perform their act, and they go, and they may come back again. But the records are not there, and they that's the way they operate. It's
to get workman's comp.
Harl, you wouldn't have any objection to adding a severability clause
to these? We prepared this at the request of the committee, and whatever the committee had wished to do is fine.
Further questions? Did you wish Mr. McLean to testify?
Well, if we could, we did cover, and I'm surprised, but we did cover the pornography issue. We've covered the reason that we think it's important, and we've submitted an extensive brief that we feel is up to date on the final word as it sets today on how you can or cannot legislate against pornography. And we feel that I'd like to just be very candid with the committee that the act as drawn here in the area of pornography, we feel is legal and meets the constitutional test and provides a reasonable grounds for enforcement against hardcore pornography. Secondly, however, we would obviously advise the committee that there are cases before the Supreme Court at this time that have been accepted on certiorari. What the Supreme Court will do, we have no idea.
Your test isn't identical to the Supreme Court's test.
It's yes, but there are cases pending up there now that have been accepted on certiorari. And we think that in viewing the reconstituted Supreme Court, that probably the pendulum is going to swing back towards stronger enforcement as opposed to extending the First Amendment privileges.
Ice water. Senator Keith Burns.
Well, Harold, you testified about somebody testifying here before about,
You got that stuff.
Organized crime washing money. Now, was that the testimony on Senate Bill 103?
I beg your pardon,
nobody
sir.
Nobody testified at that time. I was here.
Yes.
Who did?
There were two people from the vice office that came and testified up in 407A.
You were,
did we have two hearings on 103?
We had a hearing on 103 and 708. Oh,
there's a previous hearing on 708.
Right. Further question, Senator Burncutt.
Do you have you any evidence, or is there any indication that persons are procured for the purpose of participating in a live sexual act in the same fashion that I understand some prostitutes are procured? Mainly, is there any dope involved that you know of in connection with the procurement of individuals to participate in these live sex acts?
Well, we... it's kind of hard to generalize or to be very particular, Senator. We've tried cases in the massage parlor areas, in the traditional prostitution sense areas, where obviously the utilization of narcotics is involved. The age of the people who they hire, the fact that one young lady we prosecuted not too recently, we were sure was on drugs. She had actually come down with the serum hepatitis, which is usually an indication of using the needle, and it subsequently, we believe, checked out to be the fact. And in that entire area, it just becomes almost an acceptable fact that drugs and the vice industry go hand in hand. And that's one reason why you have, in the law enforcement end, you have your vice and your narcotic people together, because it's so entertaining.
Well, if it's legal, are you going to have drugs involved?
That's a good point, and it's one that I think it's a very good point, because it's a question I would have asked this year if I'd be in the Senate rather than be district attorney, because it's one I've asked before. We've all talked about, should prostitution be legalized?
Yeah.
And the thing that I've become convinced of is that there's one thing about prostitution that is inherently dangerous to the community and is evil, if nothing else, and that's that you cannot remove from it the coercive factor. You just don't have a ready market of young, attractive females who want to become prostitutes, and there is coercion in many of the cases. The pimp prostitute arrangement is basically a coercive arrangement. When we have them in court to prosecute them, the procurer, the pimp, is waiting in the back of the courtroom for him to walk out, and so he's got them, and he can pay the bail, and they go right back out on the street, and they engage in it again. And it's a pattern that we think that all too often we're prosecuting the wrong people. But again, the corroboration situation of having to have someone other than the prostitute to corroborate the misconduct of her procurer is a difficult problem for prosecution. But I don't think there's any doubt that you're not going to take coercion out if you're going to have a large number of prostitutes operating, because most people just don't want to be a prostitute.
Well, that's my point. Now, I've opposed legalizing prostitution on exactly that ground, because I think procuration is going to be involved. But the question that if we're going to test this by the same standard, and I let other people take care of their own moral problems. I try to take care of mine. But my only concern here is, are we going to have that same kind of abuse in live sex acts, the procuration thing, or aren't we? Now, if there's no real danger of procuration of participants in live sex acts, then there's no reason why we need to consider it in the same breath as prostitution, because it's a separate problem, getting into obscenity and that sort of thing.
I think it's probably fair to say that you're speaking to separate problems, at least quantitatively speaking to separate problems. And on the live sex acts, I think that you get closer to the question of whether or not that is the type of conduct that we wish to have in the community, as opposed to the other problem that both of us have addressed ourselves to. I'd agree.
Did your associate wish to?
I don't know. You want to tell him anything, Gary?
Well, the only thing I would say is, I would address this to Senator Cook, with whom I'm acquainted. I've been involved in trying these cases to quite an extent. I have, I believe, a fair degree of knowledge with respect to the law in that area and the cases that have been tried, and I would be happy on an individual basis to discuss it with you, Senator Cook, or any other members of the committee, not here this afternoon, but outside of this chamber, if that would be helpful to you.
All right, thank you.
Did you
questions?
Give me the material?
Senator Hoyt.
Mr. Howard, I'm not sure I'm reading this correctly, but Section 7 in the mocked up analogy, is that all existing language? The language sounds familiar, and I'm just trying to figure out what are amendments and what are existing language, and then I'd ask another question.
Basically, Senator, I think for the purposes of, no, all of Section 7 is new proposed Oregon Revised Statute language, and it should have been underlined.
Then, I'm sure I have another question.
Senator Hoyt.
In regard to Section 7, I thought you handled the legal aspects of that pretty quickly. I know that this is not Supreme Court sitting this morning or this afternoon, but this language is not new language, and we had this language and they found it wanting in terms of in other words, you said you thought it might be constitutional.
Senator, I would state that it is constitutional today, what we tried to do, rather than take a lot of the committee's time, we submitted written testimony with a brief included in it, which takes up all of the recent cases before the United States Supreme Court dealing with the area of pornography and obscenity. And so it does cover it. I'd be happy to go over it with the committee, but we thought we would submit the brief that way for your consideration rather than take your time here today.
Well, then I'd like to ask them, what is substantially the difference between what you have here in sub 1 and sub 2 of Section 7 and what's existing law?
Well, there is no existing law making obscene or pornographic material illegal in the state of Oregon at all today.
Except for minors.
Except for minors. And, yeah, or the other section is the public advertising area that is included. So this would be all new law as it pertains to dissemination of obscene material in Oregon.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you very much.
Senator McPherson.
Madam Chairman and members of the committee, as you well know, this is my second appearance before the committee on this particular subject, and I'm here to endorse, I think, the things that have just been told you by Mr. Haas. But I thought perhaps one thing that I should bring to you before I present to you a set of amendments which are different from Mr. Haas's is to show you the interest that I have received statewide on this particular subject. I have here my correspondence file that has come in since I last testified before you in favor of something to be done in the hardcore pornography area. There's over 1,000 letters from all over the state of Oregon written to me in support of this concept. So I know that it's one of these things that is troubling the people of the state of Oregon. And so I'm hoping that we can get together on some kind of a piece of legislation. And I think that Senate Bill 708 is probably that piece of legislation. I'll say two things in reference to Mr. Haas's amendments. I'm not, of course, a lawyer. I have Kathleen Buffet, and I'm going to ask her to join me in a minute to present the amendments that she has prepared for me to Senate Bill 708. But it appears to me that perhaps Mr. Haas's amendments might be short in two areas. One, their definition of what are obscene materials. He's left this completely open, and of course, it seems to me that a person reading the statutes ought to have some indication about what we're discussing when we discuss obscene material. The other point that I find that he has deleted from the original Senate Bill 708, the injunctive powers. It would seem to me that perhaps the committee ought to at least consider, if they adopt the rest of his amendments, reinstating the injunctive powers that would work on the materials that would be found in a Yellow Front store which sells pornographic materials. Now, if I might, I would like to call Kathleen Bouffet to the stand with me to present the amendments that we have prepared, which would essentially do what Mr. Haas's amendments would do, but in a little different way. And the reason that I ask this is simply because she has worked on this thing for about a year and a half now, and I think perhaps that she has a background that the committee should hear.
Fine.
Kathleen?
I want to ask that Harl not leave. I have a question when Katie gets through that I want to ask Harl.
Is that all right, Mr. Haas? Go ahead.
Well, Madam Chairman, members of the committee, the amendments that Senator McPherson is presenting to Senate Bill 708 are derived from the version of Senate Bill 103. The approach taken here, I would say, differs in perhaps the most obvious respect, in that the effort is made, instead of relying on the question of obscenity being that which meets the Roth test, or the Roth plus the other test, the three tests, pornography, obscenity test, is to endeavor not only to imply that test, but to describe specifically the types of material, the acts, the actions, so that one is looking not only at the ultimate result, which is the appeal to the prurient interest without socially redeeming value and so forth, but also that you're looking at what the types of acts involved are to be. And this is somewhat more closely akin to the Oregon law on pornography as it relates to pornography for minors, or the non-availability for minors, than it is to the other test. It, I hope, doesn't make too exciting reading, and I do apologize for the misspelling. I think that we have to just account that as some sort of a Freudian slip on the part of our typist.
Where is that, Katie?
The word masturbation, I think she's referring to.
The other parts of the bill, of course, are parts that I think you can see taken from 103 and are aimed at the photographing, producing, selling, showing of material having containing explicit sexual material, and it's that term which is the definition which I was mentioning to you earlier. I don't know that the word obscene ever ends up showing up in this particular version. But it would
to what? Do these apply to amended Bill 708?
No, they would apply to 708 without any other amendment.
Without any amendment, all right. Question, were you through?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Questions of Ms. Bouffet?
Well,
Senator Keith Burns.
Aren't there, aren't there about three major sedative cases now up in the Supreme Court of the United States? And
you mean already decided or pending?
Pending.
At least three. I think it's even more than that, Senator.
I generally thought that the Roth case felt made the Supreme Court one of its greatest opinions, and they had anticipated that be given an opportunity to start off kind of anew with these three cases. And what concerns me is, both sets of amendments is that we address ourselves to the Roth case, that we're leaning on a fairly weak read. Is that a fair assumption?
Well, now, the Mr. Haas may disagree with me in this respect. Of course, as he indicated, there has been a change in the makeup of the court, and we're a little unsure where that's going to take us. As a matter of fact, we're unsure where the present law on obscenity has already taken us. It isn't my guess from what I've read so far, Senator, that they will abandon the Roth test. There may be some amplification of it, and there may be some addition to it or some different route taken, such as was in the California case dealing with the topless dancers and the liquor administration used as the mode of regulation. But I haven't seen anything so far, and what I've heard, those cases are being argued in part on the Roth, based on the assumptions of the Roth test. So if the court does abandon it at this point, that may come as a surprise to a number of the attorneys arguing the case.
For the Madam Chairman. Senator John Burns.
All right. Now, Kathleen, as I understand Harl's amendments, they speak specifically to the three points that he discussed, the live show situations where they're trying to endeavor to get around the word public in the public indecency statute, the massage parlor where they use the they add the word contact conduct, which seems to me gets around that, and then of course the obscenity bit. Scanning the McPherson amendments here, it seems to me that they speak to the pornography bit, but not the other two defects, if you will, in the present statute that he's concerned about. Now, did I miss something? Do the McPherson amendments cover those other two points as well?
They do go to the public show or the live public show, Senator, and to the bookstore.
All right. Well, where do they go to the live public show?
Section 4.
Section 4? Well, but as I read that, you still have the use of public show in there, and that doesn't solve the problem that he's repeatedly run up against in prosecuting these cases in Portland.
Well, Senator, it was an endeavor to do so.
I see.
But he stated that he has the problem with the private club where you pay a dollar membership.
That's right.
All right. Now, one other question, Madam Chairman, and that speaks to the injunctive a portion of 708. Has your office, Kathleen, research the constitutionality of injunctive procedures in connection with this kind of a prosecution?
Only insofar as an injunction would apply after conviction as opposed to any effort to enjoin prior to conviction.
Well, now we presently have statutory procedures for forfeiture under the general nuisance statute. We've done that in connection with places where gambling occurred. Do we need a new section for that?
I suppose it was the conclusion in putting the bill together to try and produce a self-contained bill where you would not have to get involved with the question of whether or not such a bookstore was a place of public nuisance, because in part what might be sold, for example, in a bookstore might be quite lawful under any statute defining obscenity or anything else.
All right, but
of gambling may fall into a different category in that respect.
Your research as to injunction here is post-conviction injunction.
That is correct.
All right.
Because there's really a prior restraint question that comes up when you're dealing with First Amendment rights.
That's
that may
right.
not be involved in a gambling or other
okay.
type of...
Thank you.
Well,
thank
Faye,
you.
Would you put your amendment... Would you give us a mock-up of your amendments into Mr. Haas's amendments, and would you also add a severability clause?
You want to try and put both sets of amendments together? I'm not sure
as much as possible. Oh, okay. Recognize the problem. We talk about the private club and the injunction after conviction.
All right, and with a severability clause.
By Wednesday.
Can do. I thought maybe you wanted 15 minutes.
Thank you very much.
Now I'd like to ask.
Mr. Hawes, we have a question for you.
Harold, I was just talking to Keith, Senator Burns here about this, and I would really like to drive a procurer out of the state. And I wondered what you would think of legislation that would eliminate the requirement of corroboration of testimony in this case, so that the testimony of the prostitute alone would be sufficient to go to the jury in a question of a pimp or a procurer.
That would be of substantial assistance to us in prosecuting, certainly. We'll still have the problem that and it is inherent in that type of conduct that there will be some oppression and there will be threats. But if we can guarantee the woman that in fact yes, with her testimony we can prosecute and perhaps effectively, it certainly will make it much more feasible for us to get them to cooperate and to testify for the prosecution. I think that would be a very commendable thing. And the other side of it, something to remember, and why the area is difficult, is the potential threat of blackmail of a person who is a prostitute, maybe utilizing the fact that corroboration is not necessary to try to compromise and blackmail a member of the community who in fact did not engage in sexual intercourse with her for a fee in order to shake him down. And that's something that I think you have to consider in looking at the entire area. I can see as a prosecutor, I could imagine coming to work on a bright, cheerful Monday morning and be given a phone call from perhaps a solid member of the community stating that there's a person attempting to shake him down for $500, stating that they'll go to court and testify or go to the district attorney and say that in fact he did have sexual intercourse with this other person. This other person will testify that he did and for a fee. So that's kind of been the problem without corroboration, is that it's the one person versus the other.
But if we don't go to that, if we only go to the procurer or the pimp, do you think that would involve blackmail?
No, it'd be much less, I think, because, and then you have to realize, and I think it's fair to say that prosecutors are not, district attorneys are not out shaking the bushes looking for cases to try or to handle, that they're going to exercise their discretion, as they well should, in deciding whether or not the case obviously has any merit or not. So I would, on balance, feel that that would be a proper subject for consideration.
Harl, your vocabulary has changed considerably since you were last here.
My thinking a little bit, too, Chairman.
Thank you very
much. Yeah, could I just say one thing, just in passing? I know Senator McPherson and all of us are attempting to deal with the problem, and it's good that we're all working on it because it is certainly a complex area. I would suggest, however, that the committee, in taking a look at our brief and taking in perhaps consulting other constitutional scholars, seriously consider that if you do specifically spell out in black and white as to what conduct, actually conduct, will be considered as obscene, that you're probably going to be building in a definition that will not fit with what judges on the court will view as being obscene. And in every one of these cases, remember, it's like a de novo appeal. If you convict them in district court and the judge says it's obscene and the jury convicts, it then goes to the circuit court and the jury will say it's obscene and they convict. They then appeal it to the Court of Appeals, and the Court of Appeals, in their own judgment, independent of what the jury found, will decide as to whether or not it is obscene. And then, of course, the Supreme Court, the United States Supreme Court. It's just a de novo approach. And I think when you try to legislate that by doing this or doing that or touching a person here and depicting that's obscene, that you're going to probably draw an unconstitutional statute.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Might point out, Madam Chairman, that
last legislature eliminated the corroboration requirement from the OMFP statute, obtaining money by false pretenses. And Gary, we had the false token, which was a corroborative requirement under the old code, and it might be to pursue what Senator Cook has said, that your office might want to look at the revision to that and the research that was done on that toward eliminating the corroborative feature under this particular section.
Thank you very much, Senator.
Madam Chairman, I wonder if we could request counsel, I don't know if it should be done here, to, if it would be all right with the committee, to prepare a bill, which I'm sure we could get in through rules, that would eliminate the corroboration requirement as far as procurer's intents are concerned.
We'll have Mr. DeWin to work on it. Thank you, Mr. Hodge.
Thank you.
Paul Meyer. Mr. Meyer, have you seen the two sets of amendments that we're talking about?
Not the second set, Madam Chairperson.
Mr. Sivan, would you see that he gets the second set?
The one that Catherine, I don't remember her last name. Thank you. I am Paul Meyer. I'm Portland attorney, and I'm here on behalf of the American Civil Liberties Union. The problem with Mr. Haas's amendments is that it takes what appeared to have been a rather simple and limited bill, and I suppose we can call it an omnibus morality bill at this point, because it seeks to cover prostitution, massage parlors, and pornography all in one lump. I suppose primarily concerned about Section 7, which does attempt to insert once again into the Oregon law, as I think Senator Hoyt pointed out, an area which was familiar to him because it was deleted by the 1971 legislature. Section 7 is substantially the language which this legislature 2 years ago eliminated from the Oregon Code. This was the old section. And as a matter of fact, this old section was the section which Judges Goodwin and Baloney and a Ninth Circuit judge along with them declared unconstitutional in Hayes versus Van Humusen. Now, that case was not ultimately finalized, and it became moot because this legislature, the 1971 legislature, saw fit to take what has been acknowledged nationwide to be quite a step forward in this field. Oregon has pioneered, and I think to its credit, and I think to its benefit, the elimination of the concept of attempting to censor what adults can read. It has appropriately limited the field of legislation to minors and to what is called thrusting upon an unwilling public. As a matter of fact, I did submit, and I will not repeat written testimony that I submitted to this committee on Senate Bill 103 on March 1, and again, additional testimony, a written letter on April 3 on Senate Bill 824. But I would point out that the American Bar Association Journal, in an article last year, in the July 1972 issue, pointed out the explanation why the legislature acted, and it reviewed some of the Oregon cases, and it concluded a review of these cases by the Oregon legislature could only have reflected that the prosecution of abstract principles concerning obscenity requires too much expense, time, and judicial ado. Consequently, the legislature enacted an innovative approach to controlling the communication of explicit sexual materials. The statute, Oregon Revised Statute Sections 167.060 to 167.100, controls and limits the prosecution of obscene materials only when they are made available to minors or publicly displayed for advertising purposes. I think this kind of commendation is appropriate. I think we are moving in this field. Of course, we have the Kinsey Report on Sex Offenders, which was published in 1965,
and it concluded, I'm reading from page 678, summing up the evidence, it would appear that the possession of pornography does not differentiate sex offenders from non-sex offenders. Even the combination of ownership plus strong sexual arousal from the material does not segregate the sex offender from other men of a comparable social level. We have often found that men with large collections of long-standing lose much of their sexual response to the materials, and while their interest in collecting may continue unabated, their motivation is no longer primarily sexual. Before leaving this subject of diagnosis and forecasting, we reiterate that pornography collections follow the pre-existing interests of the collector. Men make the collections, collections do not make the men. Then we have far more detailed, following that, the President's Commission on Report on Obscenity and Pornography, which in the official edition concludes very simply in one small paragraph on page 27, in sum, empirical research designed to clarify the question has found no evidence to date that exposure to explicit sexual materials plays a significant role in the causation of delinquent or criminal behavior among youths or adults. The Commission cannot conclude that exposure to erotic materials is a factor in the causation of sex crime or sex delinquency. I think perhaps to put this in the context, in the April 1st New York Times Magazine section, there's an article by Professor Norval Morris of the University's, the Julius Krieger Professor of Law and Criminology at the University of Chicago. He's written a book which is entitled, and I don't know the significance of this, The Honest Politician's Guide to Crime Control. But in any event, this article publishes comments to I don't know to whom it's referring. It quotes, and I don't know whether this is appropriate. I'm interested to see my good friend Harl Haas seeming to look forward to the Nixon appointees of the Supreme Court for consolation. But in any event, President Nixon himself at the National Conference on the Criminal Courts had this to say, quote, we have to find ways to clear the courts of the endless stream of victimless crimes that get in the way of serious consideration of serious crimes, close quote. Also, New York City Police Commissioner Patrick V. Murphy was quoted as saying, quote, by charging our police with the responsibility to enforce the unenforceable, we subject them to disrespect and corruptive influences, and we provide the organized criminal syndicate with illicit industries upon which they thrive, close quote. Now, that does seem to suggest some difference as to what will be involved in this business of legislating morality. As a matter of fact, this article says, America still purports to punish a wider swath of human behavior than has been proscribed elsewhere since John Calvin left Geneva. Now, I don't know exactly what was being prescribed then, but I know John Calvin must have been against it. I think the final quote that I'd like to make, I think, is significant for this committee and this legislature to ponder. And that's the fundamental position I think would be asserted by the American Civil Liberties Union. The definition of the proper sphere of the criminal law given by John Stuart Mill in his essay on liberty is a good one, and one always cited by law reformers. Quote, the only purpose for which power can rightfully be exercised over any member of a civilized community against his will is to prevent harm to others. His own good, either physical or moral, is not a sufficient warrant, close quote. This article goes on to discuss the variety of victimless crimes. The title of the article is Crimes Without Victim, The Law is a Busybody. And it concludes, at least on pornography and obscenity, for those who care about such things, the commission, that's the President's Commission, has put to rest all arguments that pornography will decay the American Fiber. Readers of dirty books don't leap into the streets to commit rape. Adolescents don't stunt their growth by looking at pictures. If controls are felt to be necessary, they should be limited to prohibiting sale to minors and public display on the streets. Now, I was interested in the chairperson's comment about what might happen on certain public plays in the definition, and I was reminded back in the war, I happened to be privileged to see Alfred Lunt and Lynn Fontaine in a Terence Rattigan comedy, in which while on stage, Alfred Lunt fondled Lynn Fontaine's breasts as part of the play. Now, I presume that they wouldn't be covered and they wouldn't be violating it since they're husband and wife, which raises some equal protection questions as to whether actor and actress who are not husband and wife could play those parts. But in any event, I'm also concerned, and I think this is the fundamental thrust of what I would want to testify here to today. Apart from the fundamental aspects of whether or not the law should be a busybody involving itself in telling people what's good for them or not good for them when no harm to others is involved, is the question of priorities in our equipment and in the monies that we want to give our district attorneys. Now, I know that when Mr. Haas goes before the Board of County Commissioners with his budget, he's not going to have enough money to do all the things that need to be done in fighting serious crime, crime on the streets, crime of violence to persons and property. Now, those are civil liberties. We are not going to have a society in which people can be free if they are fearful of going about, if they are fearful of being protected in their homes, about their persons and their property. As I understood District Attorney Haas, he said it cost $1,500 to prosecute one of these cases to the district court level. Is that correct?
I believe it is what he said.
Okay. And I think he said he had 30 to 40 cases now pending. Now, if my arithmetic is correct, we're talking on that one issue alone of some $45,000 to $60,000, and that's just to the district court level. I know for a fact in the obscenity and pornography field, the amount of all of the cases in which I was involved with the district attorney of Multnomah County ended up unsuccessfully for the district attorney of Multnomah County. And I would hesitate to total the thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars that I'm sure were spent. I can recall at one point Jake Tanzer, who is one of the leading officials of this state, spent hours and hours of time on this business of fighting pornography and obscenity, all to no avail. And it seems to me that this legislature should not take a step backward. You did a fine thing in 1971 in addressing yourself to the proper function of pornography and obscenity legislation, and I think you ought to go very slow before you overturn that fine step forward. I don't think that this legislature has been presented with any real concrete evidence of the problems other than the emotional appeal on what appears to be a minority, because I will reiterate one thing, and that is that some of the polls that have been taken indicate that the majority of people do not believe in this type of censorship by one person of what some other adult can read.
Questions of Mr. Meyer. Senator Hoyt.
Mr. Meyer, I'm sure I agree with you pretty much on the literature part. I'm wondering if your group would recognize a problem in this matter of licensed acts and that type of entertainment. And if you do recognize that, do you have any constructive suggestions?
Well, our board actually had quite a debate on this issue in March, and we concluded that the legislature shouldn't be involved in it, and we shouldn't, and we should oppose legislation. Now, we hadn't, frankly, we hadn't thought to come down and bother with it as a practical matter. We didn't feel that strongly about it. We got involved because they brought back the pornography and obscenity. They won't let it alone, and it keeps reemerging. I would say that from the point of view of ACLU, yes, we would be against the touching legislation. If that's what people want, the objections I heard about noisy neighborhoods, it seems to me we've got methods of dealing with that. We can stop nuisances and we can regulate. And at least in some of the other aspects, I thought really the approach that some of the committee were suggesting, that we're involved in business regulation more than we are in prohibitory legislation, was really the thrust of what you want to do. There may be lots of areas in which things should be regulated. Maybe Senator Cook would want to legalize prostitution and regulate it in order to, for health factors and others. Didn't he say that?
Not legalize it.
Oh, I thought he said he
opposed legalizing.
Oh, he opposed legalizing. I'm sorry, I don't
know.
Well, I'm sorry, I apologize.
Well, Mr. Meyer, somehow or another, I looked to your people for guidance, but also constructive guidance. And you did mention that you spoke about touching. It seems to me that this matter of live sex acts, if you carry it to its logical conclusion, which apparently has happened in Portland, there's really not much difference between that and legalized prostitution in many respects. And I'm just wondering if we couldn't look to you for, just suppose that I said I'm with you 100% about the literature and that type of thing, but as far as the live sex act is concerned, we both recognize it as a public problem, regardless of whether it's in an neighborhood zone problem or not. Would you be able to offer anything for our consideration?
Well, it's very hard. Personally, as I say, organizationally, we think it's something that ought not to be regulated, so I can't offer anything constructive for pro-regulation or proscription. I would say that I would agree with you personally that I'm more concerned and upset about dealing with written or pictorial material than I am with live sex acts. I think that although, frankly, the live sex acts take place in a situation that apparently is relatively free from public obtrusion on the public, people, I take it, who want to go in and see that kind of entertainment go knowingly, I would think that maybe we would prefer that we had a society where people didn't want to look at that kind of thing. I don't know. I've always been more a participant in sports than a spectator myself.
Senator Keith Burns.
Paul, something that bothers me is testimony that was given here, and I didn't hear it, but in the minutes it shows up on March 28th. And let me preface this, that 2 years ago when we had the criminal code, Senate Bill 40 before us, the then district attorney of Multnomah County said that he wanted to have the wiretap portion of that bill left in there to combat organized crime. But at the same time, he told us he's speaking about in the future because there was no organized crime in Oregon at that time, to his knowledge. And then on March 28th, we had the testimony from Portland police vice officers that the pornography stores, and they said there were only three live sex acts going on in Portland at the time, and said a number of those are financed indirectly by organized crime on a nationwide scale, and said they were washing their money through these. If this testimony is true, if it's true that almost 100% of the live sex acts in Portland and the pornography stores are financed by organized crime nationwide, if this testimony is true, and if it's almost 100%, then it seems as if we're talking about something other than just obscenity laws.
Yes, my response would be that I think that the problems of organized crime are very critical in our society,
and
they're not being solved.
Do you know of your own knowledge of anything about this in Oregon today?
No, and I'm not as...
I'm amazed that such a thing could occur in a two-year period.
I know nothing about it. I don't really represent any of the people involved in the industry at the moment. I would say, though, that any time when organized crime is involved in things, this is an area where our law enforcement is desperately needed. And I think it's misleading to say that if we... I think that's the problem with the type of proposals here. They mislead us into thinking if somehow or other we get rid of dirty magazines or dirty movies or something of that nature, we're going to solve organized crime. And it really is a palliative which is misleading us. And we can't afford to spend the $60,000 in prosecuting these meaningless cases where the juries half the time are acquitting because the juries are reflecting the contemporary community standards that say, we just don't care whether this kind of thing goes on. If somebody wants to go in and be touched, fine. Let them go
ahead
and do it.
Further questions, Mr. Meyer? Thank you, Mr. Meyer.
Thank you.
Reggie Williams?
Mike, give that to Harriet.
Madam Chairman and gentlemen of the committee, my name is Reginald S. Williams. I'm a lawyer practicing in Salem. Your clerk has the record of my address and telephone number. And as you all know, I'm a registered lobbyist for the Motion Picture Association of America, of which Mr. Jack Valenti is president and Mr. Louis Neiser is general counsel. Our objections to the amendments offered by my good and esteemed friend, the district attorney from Multnomah County, are limited to the inclusion in Senate Bill 708 of his proposed Section 7. Mr. Myers already pointed out for Senator Hoyt, that proposed Section 7 is a resurrection of the concept of ORS 167.151, which was repealed by the current revised criminal code. The language of the proposed section, however, omits what was subsection 3 of that statute, which read as follows. In any prosecution for an offense under this section, evidence shall be admissible as relevant to a determination of whether or not the predominant theme of the matter appeals to period interest to show artistic, literary, scientific, or educational merit of the matter. Such a provision referring also to whether the allegedly obscene material has any redeeming social value, to quote from the new language proposed to be incorporated in the bill, should also be included. We point out also that if the revised criminal code is to be changed, which this proposed Section 7 will effect, so as to interdict and make possible upon the complaint of any well-meaning person prosecution for dissemination to adults of material which the complainant should deem, according to his personal standards, to be obscene. I'm sure that organized labor will want further amendments, probably in the form of repealed ORS 167.157, enacted in 1969, for the protection of the non-managerial employees and projectionists in motion picture theaters from such prosecutions. A similar provision is now included in subsection 2 of the present ORS 167.075, but that provision relates only to the present statutes having to do with dissemination of forbidden materials to children.
Mr. Williams,
and
may I interrupt
yes,
you for
ma'am.
A minute?
Sure.
We're running late, and those persons who are here on Senate Bill 379 and 385, I don't believe we'll get to them. We'll take them up at 4 o'clock here in this same room. So if you prefer to leave and have something else to do, we will hear you at 4 o'clock. Go ahead.
Okay.
Madam Chairman,
Senator John Burns,
you made reference to 167.157, Reg. Is that right? That's been repealed.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, I said that they would want further amendments, probably in the form of repealed ORS 167.157. That's the 1969 Act.
Was that the immunity statute?
Yes, for non-managerial employees.
Well, that's sub 2 of 075, isn't it?
Yes, but that section relates only to dissemination of obscene material to minors.
Well, you ought to prepare some of those immunity statutes for us.
I can do that, sir. The inherent, I point out, though, that the adoption of Senator, of a representative, of District Attorney Hawes's Section 7, proposed Section 7, he's been all three, I'm sorry, will constitute a complete reversal of the concept and of the philosophy of the revised criminal code, which as of this date has been in effect only 1 year and 4 months. The inherent hazards of constitutionality under the First Amendment, as well as other philosophical considerations, led the Criminal Code Revision Commission to zero in on distribution or display, even, of certain described materials to minors, even though obviously many of these forbidden to minors materials cannot constitutionally be withheld from adults. This becomes an important policy decision for the legislature and for this committee. And we suggest that if the policy and philosophy of the revised criminal code is to be so drastically turned about, the subject of the proposed Section 7 should be separately considered and not in this bill.
Thank you. Are you, you have more?
Just one more thought,
all
yes.
Right.
In the process of this business of washing of ill-gotten gains for income tax purposes, through motion picture shows, I'm sure none of that's done, and Mr. Hawes, I'm sure, does not suggest that it's done. Through any of the people, any of the exhibitors which exhibit the products of the producers and distributors who are members of the Motion Picture Association of America, if it is illegal, certainly it should be prosecuted. If it's not illegal, and it should be, then the place to make it illegal is in the Internal Revenue Code. And in the Oregon Revenue Code, and not to divert here towards the field of obscenity.
Thank you. Questions of Mr. Williams? Thank you, Mr. Williams. Dean Matthews?
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Dean Matthews. I reside in Portland, Oregon. I'm here representing the Motion Picture Theater Association. I did not feel that we'd even come down on this bill. We are not opposing this bill as it is written. I had felt you were zeroing in on one specific thing, and then now there are being amendments added to it. The testimony I've heard today, I still do not feel would hurt the legitimate theater operations in Oregon or the Motion Picture Association. Section 7 could be dangerous to our industry, and I would like to recommend the committee to be very careful when they would be considering this bill, that as a legitimate industry, we have a great investment in Oregon, and I feel your bills sometimes kind of shotgun and take in too many things rather than zero in on specific problems you may have.
Well, how could Section 7 be injurious to your industry?
Well, it seems to me that you can take any portion of that or parts of it and apply it to almost anyone that would be exhibiting or selling. It's too broad. Mr. Hawes said to you, maybe I'm not an attorney either, he said, don't be specific in what you say they can't do, that it would be unconstitutional.
No, I think he said you have to be specific.
Oh, did he say you had to be specific? I thought he said, don't be specific, it would be unconstitutional. This, I don't feel, is specific that it would take in slides from the National Geographic may have, or drawings that may be made by artists, some beautiful pictures, nudes,
well,
or whatever.
I know that you're not arguing that your industry purveys matter which, considered as a whole, has as its predominant theme an appeal to purient interest, because that's what this section proscribes. But if we are to understand your statement that I called you on, that this would injure your industry, what you're really saying is we run an industry full of pornography that appeals to people's purient interests. I know you don't mean that.
No, that isn't what I meant.
All right. I just wanted to straighten you out so that nobody misunderstood you.
Further questions of Mr. Matthew? Did you have...
No,
thank you, Mr.
Thank
Matthew.
You.
Ike Bay. That's another business.
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Ike Bay. I reside in Portland, Oregon. I'm assistant manager of the Bay News Company and president of the Oregon Periodical Distributors Association. We represent the distributors, the wholesale distributors of legitimate magazines in this state. And much like my counterpart in the movie industry, we are concerned about the legislation, although in most cases we feel that we are not going to come up against it. Our main problem is that in some cases the store owners and we as wholesalers are asked to be very talented in analyzing questions of pornography that have stumped the Supreme Court. Our organization worked very hard with Senator McPherson on the proposed amendments to his 103. He made reference to them in his initial appearance before this committee and has since abandoned them. I have not seen his amendments to this bill, although I'm very interested in them. We want to cooperate with the law. We want our dealers to be within 100% compliance of the law. And we look to this committee for some guidance and some help. We appeared last session kind of as opponents to Senate 40, just as we are listed as opponents here, because we can't actually come out and say we're supporting the bill, and so opponents are the only other avenue left to us. We are in support of the position, but we are really kind of on the fence in many cases about the wording itself. Our main concern is how the bills are enforced. Members of our association have on file with the various district attorneys letters stressing their interest in cooperation. If there are complaints, problems, we seek to do everything within our power to help. Senator Burns, I would disagree with the comment that you made. I thought Mr. Haas said that when you get very specific, when you start outlining A, B, C, D, and E, it's when you come in conflict with the law, and it's why he merely outlined the Roth decisions. When you do get very specific, you make our job a lot easier and that of our dealers. And as he commented, you start getting into constitutional questions. Hopefully, after reading Senator McPherson's amendments, and we hope to get a copy of the combined, the existing bill and the two amendments, we could come out in support of it. It would be nice to come down here in support of a bill for a change. We've never had that opportunity, although we're looking forward to it.
Questions of Mr. Bay? Thank you, Mr. Bay. Saul Mazel.
Madam Chairman, I'm Saul Mazels of Portland, Oregon, a theater operator. I'm speaking in opposition to Senate Bill 708 and the proposed amendments to the bill especially Section 7. If this bill is adopted, it would, by a conservative estimate, make it illegal for at least 70% of commercial motion pictures now produced in this country or foreign countries to be shown in the state of Oregon. Governor McCall has gone to great lengths to invite motion picture producers to come to Oregon to make films and bring their large payrolls with them. This bill would make it illegal for many of these films to be shown in the state. I doubt if film companies would look kindly upon this kind of treatment if their films were involved in countless litigations. In a casual conversation with an attorney, I hoped that he was joking when he said that he thought this was a good bill because it would be a bonanza for attorneys. There would be countless cases. Art museum exhibits and sex education films could also fall into this category, along with such magazines as Cosmopolitan, Vogue, Harper's Bazaar, and many others. Oregon would truly become a very sterile state. This bill would deny the adults of this state their right of freedom, freedom to see or read what they please. Let us face the facts. Community standards have come a long way in the past 5 years. People should not and will not be told by a few what they can see or read. This was proven by the recent election in the state of California by the overwhelming rejection of censorship, as well as the defeat of censorship in our own state in Medford. The fact remains, no one is forcing anyone to enter an adult theater. It is up to the individual to do as he pleases. Churches in the Portland area have been holding seminars on sexual problems in marriage, using explicit 16mm films as visual aids. Many psychologists and marriage counselors have urged persons whose marriages are in jeopardy to see a good adult film, and marriages have been helped in this manner. If this bill is adopted, it will put the state in the position of censoring all films, magazines, newspaper advertising, TV, and all mediums made available to the public. Anything available on a voluntary or involuntary basis would necessitate censorship, placing an additional burden on already overburdened law enforcement agencies and court systems. Attorney General Lee Johnson has publicly stated that the current criminal code provisions in these matters is a good law and that he would not ask for any changes. Yet there are a few who would impose their will upon many. This bill would be a great step backward for the state of Oregon. Finally, if by some chance this bill were adopted, then provisions must be made for an adversary hearing to determine whether a film or book falls into the category specified by this bill before action is taken against the operator, in this way saving both parties undue expense in litigation. I urge you to think diligently about this bill. It is an explosive set of rules that you would impose on the people of this state.
Questions of Mr. Maisel? Senator Hoyt.
Did you say you were in the
theater
show business?
Yes.
What kind of theaters do you have?
Well, right now our theaters are showing adult films.
What's the name of some of your theaters?
The Aladdin Theater, the Oregon Theater, and the Encore Theater.
Do they have live sex acts?
No.
Further questions? Thank you, Mr. Maisel. Would the committee turn in the same book as 708 to Senate Bill 593? We've gone through this several times, the problem with district court going on the record. And we do have a bill to implement putting district court on the record. We have a bill to repeal district court ever going on the record. And we have this one to delay for 5 years district court going on the record. John, you'd rather not discuss the bill, is that right?
No, I would... I think they should go on the record and eliminate the de novo appeal and increase their jurisdiction, make it exclusive in some form consistent with the legislation passed in 71. So I would prefer to amend whatever deficiencies there are in the 71 passed law and make it effective.
Well, statewide it would cost several million dollars to the county, and that's of great concern to them. Then you have the governor's commission working to reorganize the court, and you have this committee working in the interim to relieve district court of a lot of its work.
Well, I know, but I'm not persuaded that the governor's commission is ever going to, need I say more?
Yeah, right.
Madam Chairman.
Keith Burns.
I have a bill in, I think it's under the committee title.
I don't know.
Which would repeal what we did in 1971, insofar as making the district court the court of record. However, I'd be prepared to compromise and vote for Senate Bill 593 to delay it until 1975 until we find out whether they're going to be mainly occupied with traffic violations or what they're going to do, which I think we'll know by the next session of the legislature.
John, are you opposed to that? You feel you can't take that position?
Oh, I'm never opposed to compromise, but I'm irrevocably on the record in support of the existing law, and I'd prefer not to have to vote.
Right.
In favor of it.
You want to look at 685.
I mean, that's not in this book, is it?
Yes, it is. It's way back.
It's 685?
85.
That should follow 677.
Well, it's further back.
Got behind something else. Back there. 685.
I move it out and do pass.
Is there any discussion of the motion on 685?
I can't find the bill.
Well, it helps if you have the bill.
Oh, I don't know.
Yes, we do.
Is this
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. Do you have any questions, Senator White?
Well, I've been awful wiping the record on these things that I'm having doing it right. This has no time. It happens right away.
Well, this just applies to arrest. Of course, it doesn't apply to...
You know, I just had a case where a young man I represented who was a medical student at the time and who was arrested for non-support. He's trying to get into a veterans hospital in California as a resident some 6 years after he was arrested. The case was dismissed. Was denied admission to residency because he had an arrest record. And this kind of legislation would cure that. I think it's...
The other thing I see as being beneficial is you find, I mean, police can make mistakes, they rely upon what other people tell them.
You don't have to put down that you've been arrested.
Yeah.
And what happens is that then when that occurs, they want to sue the police for false arrest, and a lot of times the police are happy to forget about the whole thing if, and so the party, if they don't have the fingerprint and mugshot there. So I think it's desirable legislation.
Clerk will call the roll on 669.
685.
John Burns.
Aye.
Keith Burns.
Aye.
Ivory,
Floyd.
Aye.
Aye. Then would you look at 669? Provides for written notice after rendition of the judgment.
I move it out, do pass.
Discussion? Can you find it?
I've got it. I think good legislation.
Discussion? Clerk, call the roll on 669.
Jay Burns.
Aye.
Kay Burns.
Aye.
Hoy.
Aye.
Madam Chairman.
Aye. Anything else?
John, on 851.
851.
Madam Chairman, this bill, it was introduced as a committee bill. I suggested that the request of, or at the suggestion of a present student body at Oregon College of Education, he said on employment applications, there's a question very frequently, but have you ever been arrested? Well, that would mean if you've ever been stopped for a moving violation, you've been arrested. And doesn't mean whether you're convicted or not. And he felt, and I think properly so, that if a person was not convicted, and it says, have you ever been arrested, you should say no.
That's right. I think that's a good bill.
In this case, from a college kid, it's the first good bill I ever got from college, and I'd like to see it passed.
Senator Hoyt moves Senate Bill 851 out, do pass. Discussion? Clerk call roll.
Jaber.
Aye.
Jaber.
Aye.
Hoyt.
Aye.
Madam Chairman.
Aye. I'd like to discuss with you the bill we have on abortion. The sponsors of the bill are content to do nothing. It's their feeling, and evidently the Attorney General's, that if we do nothing, then anybody in Oregon can do abortions. Particularly within the first 3 months. The bill that we have pretty much conforms the law, although you may want to make some changes. But my question is, do you want to work with the bill at all, or do you want to drop the subject?
Well, Madam Chairman, my problem, most of the people who write me, they say they don't want a bill, but I know they don't understand. Because what they're doing, they leave it to as a jungle. And it just puts a person with my philosophical persuasion in a funny position. The easiest thing for me to say is no bill, but I think I'd be irresponsible if I did it. I would like to have a bill as similar as to our present legislation that will comply with Supreme Court cases, and I think that would be a responsible position.
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree. What I'd like to do is be able to talk to some of the people that proposed amendments at the public hearing and sort it out in my own mind.
Well, it seems to me that the only thing that was left was consents. And as I understand it, the district court decision obliterated consents, but I haven't read the district court decision.
Well, there's a question of the welfare beneficiaries too, which is in 698.
Yeah.
And then there's a question of the time period and the conflict in 698, and that recommended by the OMA.
Yeah, I think we can compromise on that, but really what I want to know is if you want to work with the bill.
I am inclined to think so, but I'd prefer just not to have to think about it.
I would, Madam Chairman.
That's kind of hard to do.
Yeah.
With respect to consent, both Senator John Burns and I probably disagree with respect to husband. With respect to parental consent, I am in favor of requiring consent, but not so much because of the abortion, make sure that it's done in the best facilities possible. That's why I'm concerned about parental consent. As to time, I'd like to leave the time the way our present law is, and get by with 150 days. I do not want to extend the time.
I don't either.
Well, that's fine. That's all I want to know. John, if we got any other bills we can pass without amendment?
Madam Chairman, I just read the bill that we just passed, 851, and I don't think it says what I said it said.
It's your bill.
Hold it for there too, and I'll.
Yeah, yeah. Harriet, hold that bill. Anything else, John?
Not that I can say right off.
Okay, we'll meet at 4 o'clock, same room.
Madam Chairman, I have been impaired twins.
Restate your name.